Ball in Play 2, presented by DraftKings, kicks off on May 5th. Head over to the Warehouse Games channel to catch Game 1. Get some skin in the game and download the DraftKings app right now. Don't forget to use our promo code WAREHOUSE. That's promo code WAREHOUSE only at DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours. I'm the General Lee, a pistol pumping steel velvet cavalry. I'll never let you down when you ride with me. Buckle up and I'll show you what I mean. Take a look back there. Sirens blowing, red lights flashing everywhere. We'll cross the field and we'll be running free. They'll eat us with compliments of me. The General Lee.
Welcome, welcome, welcome back to Bleeding Blue, a show on the history of the New York Football Giants. My name is Justin Penick, alongside one of my best friends in the world, Nikki Snacks. We're coming to you from an igloo.
Literally an igloo. We are. My nipples have never been harder in my life. I'm not even, like, it's not an exaggeration. I showed you. I was wearing a white shirt. My nipples were popped out.
We found.
And I'm not an attractive person. So, like, when, you know, listen, I'm not a sex, that's not what I'm saying. But, like, when a woman's nipples are popping, it's, you know,
sure.
It's fun to look at. You don't want to look at mine.
Sure about that?
I guess it depends on the person.
We found this robe that I'm wearing and that sweatshirt by like the one of the storage closets in this office. We're in John Boy Media office.
John Boy Media office. It's 90 degrees outside in New York City.
And 60 degrees in here.
60? That might be putting it lightly. It is so cold. I don't think my balls have ever been frizzled like this in my life.
Well, I look like I should be on The Sopranos.
You should. Maybe you should start watching it too, you fucking disgrace. Anyway.
So, Snacks, we are continuing to read.
Yes.
The Big 50.
Big 50. And I got to tell you, I'm loving every page of this book. And
you've
and
read more than I have.
I have, yes. I'm just about almost done. But I love the way Patty kind of like lays it out. You know, the big moments in Giants history.
Yeah.
2 to 3 pages. Like, there's no long.
Per chapter.
Per chapter, right. There's no like long ongoing spiel or anything like that. It's to the nitty gritty and it's really cool. So when we start our Twitter spaces with it, I'm pumped for you guys. It's going to be easy to follow along.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So today we're talking about three different people.
Yes, three of the mainstays in New York Giants history.
George Young, Bill Parcells, Tom Coughlin.
Yep.
Figured that those three guys kind of
should be lumped together.
Have a lot of common. Mm-hmm. You know, Young and Parcells obviously worked together to build those two Super Bowl teams up. And then Tom Coughlin as being looked at probably more than Ernie Accorsi and Jerry Reese as being like held in this more of a lore. So I would say these three guys, when it comes to football people,
yes,
they are held in the most allure in franchise history.
Not the actual players, but yes, those are probably the three mainstays of "quote unquote front office outside of the athletes type of thing." So it only makes sense to talk about all three together.
Yeah. So these are three separate chapters in the Big 50, kind of combining it to one episode. So why don't we start with George Young?
I think that's where we should start. He did come first. He was born first.
Yes. So what do you want to start? I have my notes, but what do you want to start off with?
Yeah. So we've touched on George Young in the past and how the NFL essentially forced George Young onto the Giants.
Yes.
Because Wellington and his nephew Tim were just at odds, complete odds. They had no idea what was going on. They had no idea what was doing.
They were like not speaking to each other.
No, they wouldn't be in the same room.
And think about it like this: it's not just okay. You think of ownership not talking to each other now. It's like, all right, you know, I don't think Tish and Mara right now need to have a conversation with each other.
No,
they really don't need
not.
To.
Well, Tish is always drunk, so it doesn't even matter anyway.
He's drunk and he's making movies out there in LA. Yeah. So they don't really need to have a conversation together. But Wellington at this point is running, and the Mara family, they've been running the football operations since 1925.
Yeah, they've done it one way.
Yeah.
And so everything got bad, especially after the Miracle at the Meadowlands, when that fumble. I don't really want to talk about it. I wasn't alive, but it still makes me sick even watching that play. After that, that was really
The straw that broke the camel's back.
Correct. And the NFL, what the fuck's his name? Rozelle. Pete Rozelle. Why did I say Cosell? He's the NFL Cosell. Films guy. Yeah. But Pete Rozelle stepped in. He's like, no, George Young's going to run your team.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what George Young did. But George Young wasn't accepting of the general manager job, which turns out to be the first. He was really the first true general manager of the New York Giants. He would not accept that job, quote unquote, if he didn't have final say on all football matters.
Yeah, full autonomy. Yeah,
full autonomy. He wouldn't accept it. And, you know, good for him. He shouldn't have accepted that.
Yeah.
Why would he? George Young was an established executive in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
So why would he go to a debilitated franchise? I don't even know if that's a word.
Well, it was. Yeah. It was bad.
No,
like,
no, I know.
Like, we were comparing, like, the stretch that the Giants have had since 2016 to the stretch in the 70s. And even some of the fans in the 70s were like, yeah, that's fair. But then you also had, I think, more or less more people saying, no, that stretch in the 70s was worse.
It was terrible.
Than the, you know, the 6-7 year stretch that we've had the last couple years.
Right.
I think there's merit to both.
There absolutely is merit to both. So the fact that to just like, and Wellington, who is running everything for however many years,
yeah.
It's quoted, he was reluctant to give George Young full power, final say. I guess maybe he finally saw the light and was like, okay, this is so bad.
Mm-hmm.
I have to step aside and let George Young do it.
Yeah.
And he finally did on Valentine's Day in 1979.
Yeah.
And from there.
Rest is history, as they say.
Rest is history.
Rest is history. That's what the show's about. George Young spent 15 years as a high school teacher. He was a college defensive lineman at Bucknell. He was drafted in the 26th round by the Dallas Texans in 1952, but was cut during training camp.
He
joined Don Shula in Baltimore.
Yes.
When they were still the Colts. Then he jumped to Miami when Don Shula was down there. He became the team's director of pro scouting, not pro personnel. Shula joined the Dolphins after the 72 undefeated team, so he was not there for that undefeated team. But they still did have, I believe, Young was there for 3 seasons. Two of them were winning seasons. Two of them were also double-digit winning seasons, so the team had a lot of success there.
And his fingerprint was on a lot of that team.
Yeah, and then he was a hot commodity that the commissioner of the NFL pointed out, and then he became the Giants GM.
Yeah, and it's so crazy to me. Like, the Giants, you know, the New York Giants, yes, they do play in New Jersey, but they're you know, a hallmark NFL franchise.
Yeah.
For them to be that bad, that's not good for the NFL.
No.
It's awful for the NFL. It's probably awful for Goodell right now. Well, yes. Maybe not, because, you know, NFL is just ridiculous nowadays. But back then,
mm-hmm.
you have a New York, New Jersey market team that's atrocious and nobody gives a shit about. You're probably going to want to step in and do something.
Yeah.
So that's where George Young came into play, and he finally got, you know, they finally got the guy that they needed to turn everything around, and probably started in 81 with a certain draft pick.
Yeah. But. Oh, that's true. That's true. Mm-hmm. Wellington Mara did say, we weren't able to get Don Shula, but I'm glad. Yes. I was glad to get his right arm.
Yes, and that's literally the case because, no, Don Shula wasn't coaching the team. Don Shula is a Hall of Fame coach, one of the best coaches ever. But he got the guy that was making all the moves for the players that Don Shula coached.
Yeah, BTS, yeah, behind the scenes. Yeah.
So, what?
BTS, behind the scenes. I'm starting to integrate more acronyms
in my life.
Yeah,
I see that. Don't fucking do it in front of me.
IRL.
Don't do it in front of me.
In real life videos, BTS, behind the scenes.
Don't
I'm becoming a media some clowns.
I got one.
Yeah.
F you. Fuck you.
Mm, nice. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
So George Young was kind of a messy
slop.
Person.
Yeah.
He also, we mentioned he was a defense lineman. You said that he sucked. You know, he went to Bucknell.
Oh, I have no idea.
It was really mean.
Yeah, I know.
Probably,
he's dead.
Probably would kill you. Yeah. Think about it.
I mean,
he was a big guy.
He was, but like when you look at him when he was the Giants general manager, he was very thin.
Well, no. Well, he got sick, and he lost like they talked about this in the Patty talked about this in the book. He lost like, you know, almost like 100, maybe give or take 100 pounds.
Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah.
In a very short span of time, and so you see a lot of like. The Hall of Fame photos that they use, it's him when he's older and then when he's thinner.
Yes.
But then you also
That's like the iconic...
Yeah, show the
George, that's like the iconic George Young
no, I mean,
to me.
But
no, to you. Like what I know George Young to be is that that picture.
But if you don't know and you're a little bit younger and you're like Snacks and I, like I looked up pictures and it was like next to him and Parcells like on the field. It's like this guy, he was a bigger guy.
He's a chubby dude, yeah.
He reminded me of myself when I was... Bigger. I got a comment on Reddit. I can say this on this show because I don't care. I got a comment on Reddit where one of the reasons why I did try and lose weight is because I felt peer pressure by YouTube and Reddit by calling me fat. So I was like, fuck this. society peer pressured me into getting healthy.
Really?
So yeah, now I saw a comment on Reddit that says, you talk about the weight loss too much. I can't fucking win.
You can't win. There's no
fun. I can't win.
But see, that's your problem because you're taking into account other people's opinions of you and you should never.
Yeah,
you
know, I can't go on Reddit.
You know how many times people tell me to stop drinking? You think I'm gonna?
Damn right. You brought some Pinot to the office today.
Had to do it.
Come on.
Had to do it.
But George Young reminded me of myself, especially when I was in college, where everything is just a controlled, at least for me, is an interesting word. But for George Young, it actually was a controlled mess.
Yes. I mean, Ernie, of course, used to say he'd go into his office, to George Young's office, when, of course, he was the assistant general manager, and there would just be piles of papers everywhere. Everywhere. Like, here.
Can you give me a report on this player, Ernie Corsi would say?
Yeah.
But George Young was like, oh, wait. Here.
Yeah, it's in this pile. It's in this pile. Hold on, one second.
He knew exactly. Yeah. So here's my question to you. Are you that kind of worker? And if you were a GM, so not even like if you're that kind of worker, because maybe right now it's like, well, having a GM job, it's like I'm going to take tremendous pride in that, so I'm going to be organized.
Yeah.
But what kind of, if you were GM of the Giants, would you want everything to be tip-top organized and everything clean, or would you be like George Young?
No, I'm George Young.
Okay.
I'm just trying to think like to myself how it would be. In my real life, so in my work life, I'm not the most organized person.
But do you take, if you were to have the Giants GM job, would you take just as much pride and attention to detail in that as like your main job right now?
Well, without a doubt, even more so, yeah. Yes. But I would still be the disorganized person I am.
Yeah.
Like I do my job in real life very successfully, but it's also...
Humble brag.
Yeah, fine.
I'm terrible at mine.
I agree.
Yeah.
But...
I'm wearing a robe.
Hey.
can we talk
We're
about that?
We're in a fucking igloo.
Can we talk about that?
But so I'm very old school, as you know. So I write a lot of notes. I rip papers off of yeah. notebooks like this. So everything is all scattered, mm-hmm. but everything is there.
Yeah.
May it take me a second to do that? Like Kayvon Thibodeau, where's his 40-yard day? Okay, it's in here somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I will have everything, and I will study everything beautifully, and I'll have 8,000 pages of notes on every single player, but yeah, I would be a mess.
So you would be Dave Gettleman binder guy, not Joe Shane.
Correct. Yeah.
Wow.
I'm not, I don't, you know me in technology.
You're terrible.
We don't mix at no. all. I barely know how to turn my laptop mm-hmm. on. And that's weird.
You've called me and I've had to help you turn
you've
on your laptop.
You've walked me through how to get
onto a Zoom meeting.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's how I first started to know how to do Zoom. I had no idea. I was completely clueless, and Justin walked me through it. So that's how bad I am. So no, I'm not the young, handsome stud Joe Shane is with all the technology and all the video boards like that. I am Dave Gettleman binder guy. Yeah.
Okay.
And putting it in the binder would be a stretch too. So
my first 2 weeks, I'd be so organized. I'd be so awesome. I'd feel great.
And then you're out.
And then that's it.
Yeah.
And that's how like my college life was.
And I was just going to say, that's also probably for a lot of people too. Like your first 2 weeks of your job,
you feeling really good.
Want, yeah, right, right.
We got a rhythm.
Yeah.
I'm going to stay on top of this.
Yeah. Grizzly Adams had a beard.
Grizzly Adams did have a beard. I want to read the bottom of page 63.
Yep. I know exactly.
Of this book that we're reading. And I want to read George Young's track record. From 1979 to 1995, 119 of his draft picks made the final roster as either a starter or a reserve player and appeared in a minimum of 10 games with the team. In addition to Phil Simms, which was one of his first draft picks,
mm-hmm.
some of his more notable draft picks included Hall of Fame linebacker Lawrence Taylor, tight end Mark Bavaro, linebackers Carl Banks, Pepper Johnson, Gary Reasons, running backs Joe Morris, offensive lineman Billy Ard, William Roberts, Jumbo Elliott, and Carl Nelson, defensive backs, a lot of good defensive backs,
mm-hmm.
Terry Kinnard, Mark Collins, and Perry Williams, defensive lineman Leonard Marshall, and receiver Lionel Manuel, among more.
That's the core of two championship teams.
Yes, and he was also executive of the year 1984, 1986, 1990, 1993, 1997, January of 2020, elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
He got executive of the year that many times?
It's kind of
That's
crazy.
That's crazy.
That is kind of crazy. That's like video game, like
yes.
2K, my association numbers, like right. my GM, whatever.
Yeah, that's me trading all my future first and spending all my yeah. cap space for the best team in Madden
yeah.
and then winning the, yeah.
And then just winning executive of the year every year after
that. That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
George fucking Young, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
Hmm.
I'll find something to hate about him.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, so this is what you can kind of not like, is that once the salary cap was introduced,
he didn't know what he was doing.
In the 90s, and this is also when his health, I believe, started to fade a little bit too. In the 90s, there were some really bad first-round draft picks. I mean, we clown on Cedric Jones all the time, drafted a blind guy. I blame that more on Steven Verderosa, even though Steven Verderosa probably never watched a second of Cedric Jones' film. I think it's just funny to blame that on Steven Verderosa. You blame it on the medical staff, too. It's like, oh, yeah, this guy can play when he's blind. I mean, Ronnie Bonds. At the end of the day, George Young, I mean, the GM takes responsibility, especially for the first round. I mean, not just a first round pick. This is like a top 10 pick. Like, I want my GM making the top 10 pick. So it's not like we're talking about a fourth rounder that we're taking a chance on. That was bad.
All the blame lies on George Young.
Yeah, the epitome of what kind of went wrong in the 90s for George Young.
I'm sorry, what was the 90s year he won executive of the year?
He won 93 and the 97.
How the fuck did he win 93?
I have the Giants record. So what did they go that year? What did they go in 97?
Is that when they won with Fossil?
No, that was 2000. It was 2000.
I know it was 2000, you dope.
Fossil, that was the first year of
Fossil.
Yeah, and
they won a division. They weren't supposed to. Yes, yeah. See? What did I say?
Was this point differential that they had a minus point? Yeah, they had a minus point differential that year. 1997, they had a minus. No, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it was 97.
It was plus 42.
It was 97 they won the division.
Yeah. Fuck. May have to edit that part out.
I thought, no? Why? Authenticity.
I know.
It's what we strive for.
I got stuff wrong. I said wrong facts.
We do that
stuff
all the time.
Yeah.
We left off, what's his name, from What did we get shit on for? Undrafted free. What was it?
Yeah, it was the best. We left out Rosie Brown.
Rosie Brown. Yeah, we got shit on for that.
We did.
It just means people are listening.
That's right.
So,
all right. Here's what I want to talk about, and then we'll move to
jerseys.
We'll move
son.
Our Jersey guy.
Jersey's native.
Bill Parcells. We'll move to him. So Ray Perkins.
Yeah.
Leaves after the 1982 season.
Thank God.
He gets a shot with the college team. It allows Bill Parcells to get the reins of the team. Does Bill Parcells get his shot if Perkins doesn't leave? And I don't know.
I mean,
answer this. I would. Yeah, what's your opinion on this?
I mean, to me, probably not. No, he'd be swooped up by another team that year if Perkins stays,
or Perkins eventually gets fired because they were like iffy with Perkins. They were iffy.
It was Hanley who was a joke, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that was after Parcells. But Perkins, they went 9-7, 4-5 in 1982. There was an NFL player strike between week 2 and week 11,
which is crazy to us,
of that season. Yeah. So we were like, what happened there? And that's lo and behold, that's what happened. Perkins had 4 seasons with the Giants. He went 6-10, 4-12, 9-7, and 4-5. So you can look at the strike year and be like, it's funky. We were one game away from 500. Yeah. He was going to stay. I think he was going to stay.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, but like that's not the world's greatest track record
either. No, so if there was one more bad season, you think Perkins then gets fired, and then is Parcells also shipped out because they want just new blood?
Yeah, I guess that's a good thought process, you would think, because then Parcells gets bumped up. But if Perkins doesn't leave, does Parcells get nipped by another team?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
It's just an answer we can't really give because we have no idea.
Because you got to think of...
We're going to talk to Big Blue VCR about this.
Yeah, we do.
He probably knows.
Maybe we'll shoot him a DM and then we'll just include the snippet in there.
Yeah,
he'll write us a novel.
Of course he will.
We know that.
Big Blue VCR, man. He's a talker.
Yeah.
Love him.
So, I mean, because that's a huge... That is arguably the biggest part of George Young's tenure with the Giants, besides drafting Lawrence Taylor,
is getting Bill Parcells as head coach, right?
And so we were talking about this before we kind of came in here, Snacks, just saying how there are certain things that went good for the Giants that they kind of just stumbled into throughout their entire tenure that they looked into, and then certain things that they should have done that they had control over, they just didn't do.
But it's the same process, though.
Yes.
Like, because, you know, the Giants we've always joked that they're family-oriented. They just hire from who they know, and that worked with Parcells. It worked with Coughlin. It doesn't work with Gettleman. It doesn't work.
Right.
Like, so that's what we're saying. Like, they lucked into two of the best coaches in NFL history.
And they lucked into George Young, basically.
And they lucked into George Young, right.
Because the two owners were basically like members of the Eagles, and they just couldn't.
So the Giants aren't good. They're lucky. But you know what I always say? better lucky than good.
Yeah, and we learned on the and also they also sort of lucked into Lawrence Taylor too.
They did because Big Lou VCR told us that story. Like if the Jets
lost that meaningless game against Miami,
gave us the number two pick,
which is so nuts.
It's unbelievable. So nuts. The best football player ever, and we lucked into it.
So nuts. And then certain decisions like Belichick, George Young. That was a big part of George Young too. After Parcells retired, which there was a little bit of beef between Parcells and George Young. I think Parcells kind of disagreed with some personnel decisions.
Yeah, that was towards the end.
It was towards the end, but even towards the beginning when they cut Brian Kelly and Brad Van Pelt.
Right.
Those were two tough decisions, but it seemed like they were necessary decisions. Even though I would have loved to see those two guys win a Super Bowl, Brad Van Pelt.
I was just gonna say, especially Brad,
neither here nor there. When Parcells retires and George Young is a little salty about that, George Young was the one to say that I don't think Bill Belichick's demeanor is going to fit New York.
And for as many good things as George Young did, could you imagine?
He's not wrong, but he's still a football coach.
He's the greatest football coach of all time. So that was 93, right?
Yeah. It was 91. So Parcells won the Super Bowl.
91. So could you imagine if they did the right thing and made Bill Belichick the head coach? He'd still be the coach today.
Maybe. And then also
that's like 30 fucking years of Bill Belichick.
Another alternate universe where, and this is what Patty talks about, which I never knew, because everybody always talks about, well, what if Belichick took over? What if Belichick took over?
This is great. Yeah, yeah.
Tom Coughlin was the wide receivers coach. He was in the running to be the head coach. And then if he didn't leave for Boston College, there's a chance that Tom Coughlin gets the head coaching job for the Giants 15 years before he actually takes it.
Yep, yep. Imagine that world. That's
crazy.
See, to me, if you rewrite history, those two Super Bowls may not get won if Coughlin's hired in 91.
He's not.
Because think about it. He may be fired after 5 years.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't draft Eli 13 years.
Because also there's like Dave Brown. There's bad quarterbacks. But that's what I'm saying.
He probably gets fired way before he even starts getting success.
Yeah.
So.
Nuts.
It's crazy. And that's what we were talking about before. Like they really do it in like a family style. Do we know you? If we know you and trust you, you're gonna get an opportunity.
I mean, Coughlin got the job eventually.
Yeah. And that was Wellington Mara's last. Truly his last big decision.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So imagine that alternate universe and that timeline of not just the whole Belichick thing, but...
It's nuts.
But, you know, Tom Coughlin. And then also George Young. I kind of love how Patty just puts this in there. George Young just adamantly says, yeah, Ray Hanley was like the worst thing that I ever did.
Yeah. And
which a lot of fans agree with.
Yes. Yes. My father still talks about it. Yeah. When he used to talk about he used to call Joe Judge Ray Hanley.
Nice.
He said he was that bad.
Nice.
But it's all the Bill Belichick thing. Because Bill Belichick, everybody knows he said it on the ESPN documentary, the Bill vs. Bill, whatever it was, Bill and Bill. He wanted to be the head coach in New York Giants.
Yeah.
But Parcells kind of did him dirty. Mm-hmm. Like he was like, I'm not gonna retire. I'm going to keep coaching the Giants. So Belichick took the Browns job. And then a little bit later, Parcells retired.
Yeah.
Kind of fucked him over.
Yeah.
And fucked us over. Mm-hmm. But
you kind of have to have, I am of this belief, to be successful in football, sports, competitive business. I mean, this is with anything. You got to have a little bit of an ego to you.
Oh, absolutely. You think Parcells wanted Belichick to be a better coach in Giants history than him?
No.
No.
No. Absolutely
not. That's Parcells. Parcells was a homegrown kid. He was a New York Giants fan growing up.
Yeah.
That's the legacy he wanted.
Yeah.
And he definitely knew how good Belichick was.
Yeah. All right, so let's...
Speaking of Parcells.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about Parcells. We already talked about, you know, kind of how he was brought on and then how he kind of left, too.
Yeah, he's he's born 5 minutes from me, by the way.
Really? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, BBVCR has talked about, you know, his brother, how he was...
His brother was a referee for our youth basketball and football games.
Englewood, New Jersey,
yes. But then I think they moved to Oradell, I want to say.
Sure, yeah.
But either way, right there next to me. And his brother was truly a great guy. Got along with parents where, you know, when you're refereeing youth sports, parents usually fucking hate you. But when you're Bill Parcells' brother, I think you get a pass.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so Bill Parcells, when he was hired, he goes 3-12-1 his first season. Not very good. Wellington Mara, George Young, they're all considering whether this guy's the right guy. But Parcells has to go through a little bit of a transformation. I didn't really fully know this. So, at first, the defensive players weren't happy. Parcells, they said, was one of them, an honorary member. So this is when Parcells was hired to be head coach, that the defensive players were not happy that he kind of got that promotion. But sometimes when you care enough about one of yours, as the Giants members of the defense did about Parcells, you have to let go. Once he became the head coach, we realized we had to take a different approach, because if we continue to refer to him as our guy, our position coach, he was the linebackers coach, mm-hmm. we were concerned that the other guys wouldn't necessarily have the respect for him, linebacker Harry Carson said. So we adjusted to him as the head man, and we were able to sort of work together to get certain things done. And his first year, Parcells kind of took that mentality of being a player's coach.
Yes, and which we're going to talk about in a little bit too. It's funny how there were two different approaches by the two best coaches in Giants history. One starts off as a player's coach, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And transforms to a hard ass, Bill Parcells.
Mm-hmm.
And the other was brought in as a hard ass, Tom Coughlin, and completely transformed to a player's
coach.
Love
that dichotomy.
Crazy, isn't it?
Look at you. Great radio right there.
Got a face for it.
Parcells, yeah. Parcells also went from being a mild-mannered sweetheart of a guy to wisecracking, sometimes cantorous. I said that wrong. Can we get a definition of the word C-A-N, tankerous?
Yeah, it means fuck Tiki Barber.
Sure. A man who was far less forgiving of mistakes players made to beat themselves. Rather than becoming a ranting lunatic, though some of his former players might argue that at times he was, Parcells figured out how far he could push each of his players and then trying to push them even further, which that is my favorite kind of coach. And those coaches typically are the best, not just ones that they're just straight up assholes to every single player, but some players, like, you need to be assholes too.
Oh, you have to.
Some players, if you kind of get in their face too much, they turn off. So you kind of have to know your players and what they respond to.
Right, exactly. And if I think that's, in recent memory, that's probably been a problem for some of the guys on the Giants.
I don't think McAdoo got it. I don't think Shermer got that.
No.
Especially I think with those two guys, it's like pushing your players.
Yeah, they just didn't have it. And that's, to me, and I know we're talking about Parcells, and I'm going to go back to a Parcells story about George Martin that I absolutely love.
Yes,
I
want to talk about that.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it was kind of like Coughlin. I don't think he realized that the first couple of years. But then mm-hmm. he figured out what makes a player tick. What's good for this player? What's good for that player?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the best coaches in any sport really learn to adjust and adapt to their players and what they see fit.
Yeah,
it's not always just X's and O's. If your player doesn't trust you, you know, calling a play or coaching you in practice, you're never gonna get the most out of that player.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that's something that's pretty special about Parcells, and again, Coughlin that we'll talk about. Please talk about this, George Martin.
No, I want you to talk about it.
You want me to talk about it? Okay.
Yeah.
So George Martin was I mean, one of the best yeah. Giants ever.
And he was one of the longest tenure Giants, going back to the 70s. He only won one Super Bowl with the team. He wasn't there for the second.
But he was a highly touted rookie.
No. There was a highly touted rookie.
I'm sorry. And then George was a highly touted rookie.
And
yes,
George Martin was one of the veteran mainstays of the team.
Yes. And
This rookie.
And the rookie kept jumping off sides.
And it was so bad to the point where people are starting to feel bad for him.
Yes. And they're all waiting for Parcells to just explode.
Yeah.
And George Martin tells the story the third time it happens. And Parcells, this is a quote directly from George Martin. After he jumped off sides for the third straight time. Parcells gathers us together, Martin said, and says, guys, this is the kind of shit that we will no longer tolerate in this organization. These are the kind of mistakes that get you beat, and I, for one, will never, ever be accepting of that kind of performance. And if it ever happens again, I'm going to hold you, George Martin, responsible. So George Martin's not the one jumping off sides. It's a highly touted rookie defensive lineman.
And then George Martin is like, what the fuck, it ain't me.
he goes, Martin can laugh about the incident now, but back then he certainly wasn't laughing. Like, could you imagine? Like, Bill Parcells, the head coach of the team, gathers around the defensive players and is like, George Martin, it's your ass. You're the guy that's been here the longest.
This rookie
keeps jumping off sides. Your ass.
I think it's hilarious.
It's hysterical.
Just imagine just being like a player. Imagine being like an offensive player. Like, imagine being a wide receiver, knowing that this is happening, and, you know, not having, you know, like, hey, if a in a way, I hope the defense is fucking up if I'm an offensive
Absolutely.
Player.
Makes
you know,
look better. Yeah.
It's like, and also it's less that I have to do,
right,
and it's
exactly,
less attention.
Yeah.
That's, you know, it's not my ass on the line that day. So then it's like, imagine, and then it's like, I will hold you, George Martin's.
That's the best part. I'll hold you, George Martin.
You.
Personally responsible.
That is so fun. And then what I, you know, the best part about this is then Parcells, you know, there's a confrontation. And I think Parcells either calls Martin into his office or Martin goes into Parcells' office and says, basically, you're one of the veteran mainstays on this team. I know that, you know, you can handle it, number one. And number two, if I hold you accountable, then
it holds them.
Everybody's ass is on the line.
Yeah. So in sense, like what he, we were just laughing hysterically about it.
Yeah.
But it is.
There was a method.
Exactly. There was a method to that madness. It was chestnut checkers. Like, if you're going to do that to anybody, it's George Martin. You do it to George Martin. And it does. It sets the tone for the rest of the team, and it holds everybody else accountable. Yep. So while it's lunacy, but
worked. Worked. Yeah. It worked. And it worked for a lot of different teams, too. So as a head coach, Parcells finished with 183-138 and one overall record, becoming the first head coach in league history to coach four different teams, Giants, Patriots, Jets, and Cowboys, in the playoffs, which is absurd. Yep. Two-time NFL Head Coach of the Year winner, 1986-1994. He had a knack for turning descending teams into contenders, the first time which he did in 1984 with the Giants. I think that is really crazy. That Parcells really did bounce around.
Yeah.
Every single team that he went to.
Yeah.
You kind of just snapped your fingers. Maybe one year where it's like, all right, we got to get it together. But then the next day we're like in the playoffs.
It's why you have to make an argument. He's one of the greatest coaches. I mean, there is already an argument of that, but he really genuinely, truly is one of the greatest coaches of all time. And I got to tell you, just let me get this off my chest.
Sure.
Seeing him in those fucking cowboy colors.
Killed you?
Ugh. Killed my father more than anybody.
Yeah, I really, at the time I was young and I didn't quite fully get it. And I didn't fully know that.
Yeah, it was like 2003.
Like, I didn't have that allure of like, hey, this guy is the man when it comes to the Giants. Yeah. But now looking back on it, I can imagine how weird it was.
It's nauseating. Yeah. With those double, I remember in the Cowboys won at Giants Stadium in overtime to kick game-winning field goal. And just, I remember him being on the fucking sidelines for a Cowboy. I was just, ugh.
Didn't feel right? Yeah. It's my observation.
It was fucking nauseating, Justin.
I'm sure being nauseated doesn't feel right.
Move on.
Let's wrap up with Tom Coughlin, because Patricia Traney has two different chapters devoted
two
to Tom Coughlin.
Yes. I mean, Tommy was a big mainstay in Giants history.
So it's General Tom is one of the first chapters, and then Tom Coughlin resigns.
Didn't resign.
Yeah, you would have an editor's note there, right?
Yeah, he didn't resign.
What was he?
He got fired.
Sure.
John Mara kicked him out. I'm sorry. Am I wrong? There's no other explanation. You think Tom Coughlin retired, resigned. You think so?
No.
No, absolutely not. And you knew that when he walked off the stage at his press conference.
Oh, I knew that.
Didn't shake his hand, didn't do anything.
I kind of liked that moment.
Oh, I loved it.
Yeah,
I liked it. There was not. That is my favorite time. It's not the red face in Green Bay. It's not the two Super Bowls. My favorite Tom Coughlin moment was his last as a Giant. And he walked right off that stage past John Mara.
I disagree with
didn't
that.
Didn't even look him in the fucking eye. Because John Mara should have no respect. Never give that man respect. Never. He ousted a Giants legend. Did he not?
I know what to do to get you going. I take pride in that.
Yeah, it works.
I know what buttons to push.
And then they kept that miserable fuck Reese too, which to me, that's what started this whole fucking mess that we're in present day history.
Does he have a chapter written on him?
Jerry Reese? He better not. He better not.
I shouldn't say that.
I shouldn't say that. Jerry Reese deserves credit. He does. Jerry Reese was a mainstay in the Super Bowl 42 win. So I shouldn't say that.
There's some chapters that don't have names next to them automatically, but I don't know if he does in this book.
He probably gets mentioned.
I'm sure he gets mentioned.
I haven't read it yet, so.
I'm sure he gets mentioned, but I mean, you would think that maybe he would have a whole chapter.
I mean, he only had one off season. That was good.
You got 50 moments. Didn't even make one.
All right. So let's before I go on again about like the exit of Tom Coughlin, why don't we start General Tom?
General Tom. All right. 2003 into 2004, Giants went on a coaching search. Coaches that were being considered Lovie Smith, Romeo Crennel, Charlie Weiss, and Tom Coughlin. They were the coaching candidates.
Lovie Smith would have been the only one on that candidate list that...
You would have been entertained?
Yeah, I mean, well, think about it. Charlie Weiss was atrocious at Notre Dame. That's college. And he was...
Was that a hot coaching pool in, like, 04?
I remember in the New Jersey Record, it was like, yeah, it was like, this is like a historic coaching pool.
Yeah.
And those were the four guys, yeah.
Crennel was fun.
Yeah, it was a big fat slob.
He would have lost his mind in New York.
Yeah, I know.
Remember that? What was the post-game press conference?
No, wasn't Romeo Crennel.
That's it. Well, no, that he had one. Which that one? Was bad. We are who we thought they were.
No.
That was Romeo Crennel.
That was another Denny Green.
That was another
Dennis Green.
That was another big black guy. Yeah. I just got him.
No, it's true. No, it's true. And he had a mustache. Too. Yeah. No, I know what you mean.
My bad. I'm a bad guy. Okay. I'll own that.
It's okay. You knew the rant anyway. But Crennel, I think he went on to the Browns and he was terrible there. Like, this is one of those guys that was a coordinator.
Yeah.
Charlie Weiss, eh. They were the two hot names with the Patriots. They won like two Super Bowls. Three
Crennel,
Super Bowls.
Weiss, and Crennel coached with the Giants, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
He did.
So three of them.
Yes.
Shocker.
Yeah.
They had ties to the Giants.
Yeah. Of course. And then there was Lovie Smith, who was the hot name from the Rams. Yeah.
So Tom Coughlin got hired by the Giants, and there was conversations amongst DeCourcy and the Maras about, is Tom Coughlin going to fit in New York, and how is he going to get along with these players?
Definitely
not. I want to talk about this for just a little bit. So it was reported that Coughlin fined Jaguars cornerback Dave Thomas $1,500 when Thomas skipped the mandatory meet-and-greet banquet on an off day because he stayed home with his two-year-old fever-stricken son. Coughlin also fined Banks and Cordell Taylor $500 apiece. This was, I believe, all in Jacksonville.
Yes.
When both arrived late for a team meeting after being involved in a car accident on a rain-slicked bridge. Like, that's... Come on.
you know...
That's asshole behavior. That's asshole behavior.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Is that not an asshole behavior?
No, you're not a human being if you do that. A two-year-old... With a fever. And a family man that we now know Coughlin is, after the softer side that was given, he loves his family more than he loves anything. So how he decides to fine somebody for taking after their kid is mind-blowing to me. Now, however, this kind of, a lot of these stories scared Wellington Mara off.
They did, yeah.
Like, there was a lot of these little nuances that were like, okay, Mara, you know, Mara's thinking, all right, maybe this isn't the guy. He was probably number one on their list, too, I would assume.
Yeah, he was like low-key number one also in 1990.
Right. So after those ridiculous fines, and here's the quote, despite this history, Mara wasn't quite ready to give up on Coughlin as a candidate. He reached out to some of Coughlin's former players for some feedback, one of whom was tight end Pete Mitchell, who had been college teammates with Mara's brother-in-law and who had not only played for Coughlin in Jacksonville, but who also played for the Giants. So, again, Wellington Mara goes to somebody he knows.
Yeah.
I had a long, honest conversation with Pete about Tom, Mara recalled. Pete said he couldn't imagine playing for anybody else, that Tom was a great coach to play for. Yes, he was tough, but he was also fair. He got the most out of his players. And if he had to do it all over again, he would play for Tom and not think twice about it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what sold Wellington Mara to hire
Tom Coughlin. Absolutely.
Because there's a lot of backstories on Tom, a lot of ridiculous things, especially in New York, New Jersey, that doesn't fly.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw it with Strahan. Like, why am I getting fined for being 3 minutes early to a meeting?
Tiki.
Yeah.
Who? You just said his name. I'm allowed to say his name. You're not. I think you need to retire. I think that's it. I think you need to excuse yourself. We're almost done anyway. I could just finish off.
This is the lowest point of my career.
Your entire career.
But anyway, yes. He had a lot of miserable fines that was just unbelievably.
But ridiculous. He transformed. And we talked
a
lot about that, you know, when we actually read Coughlin's book and stuff like that. But something that I think is missed through his transformation is that how much you have to humble yourself to do that.
It's crazy.
Because let's go through Tom Coughlin's year-in, year-out records as an NFL head coach. 4-12.
Jacksonville.
With Jacksonville. First year that Jacksonville Jaguars is a real football
existent
team.
Yeah.
Then they're 9-7. Awesome. Then they're 11-5. Two seasons of 11-5 in a row. Mm-hmm. Awesome. 14-2. And that's when they make the AFC Championship, I believe. Awesome.
Correct.
And then 7-9. All right, you're coming down to earth. And then two seasons of 6-10 with Jacksonville. And then you're, and then he takes a, then he kind of takes season off. He leaves Jacksonville. First year with the Giants, 6-10. Kind of bad when you consider that they started 5-2.
Correct, but it was also a transition year. Everybody knew that.
11-5. Awesome.
Won the division.
But you get embarrassed in
the
wild card game. 23-0. Yep. But still an 11-5 season.
Right.
Then you have 8-8.
Which is another bad year because they started 6-2.
Correct.
And they lost in overtime to the Phillies.
Still,
to Philly.
But still, like, you make the playoffs.
Make the playoffs, right.
You know? Yeah. Then you have, what year? I'm sorry. I gotta.
That was 06.
I gotta cross. All right, so 06. Hey, but that's before the transformation.
Right.
So you look at all that.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt. I'm sorry.
No, no.
And you may just about to say this. But you went 11-5 on the division in the playoffs. You went 8-8. Yes, you started 6-2, but you went 8-8. Fine. Made the playoffs.
Yeah.
And they were still talking about firing.
Yes. So you could look at that as just, I may even be looking at that saying,
why do I need to transform?
Fuck this.
Yeah.
If I get fired and if they want to keep me, great. I'll go and I'll do this again.
Look at the past 5 years. Really?
If I get fired, I'm going to get another head coaching job.
Without a doubt. Absolutely.
Those performances and those records were not bad enough for Tom Coughlin. If he was let go after that 06 season or even after 07, if he didn't make this transformation, he would never get another head coaching job again.
Yeah. So
humbling you got to be?
It's crazy because think about it. I mean, you know, scumbag quitter retired and called him out and in the media. And, you know, Jeremy Shockey didn't have the nicest things to say. Strahan was very vocal about it. So, those are three superstars for New York Giants. But it's not like Coughlin didn't have success.
Yeah.
So he's got to change his ways just to be more successful. So you're right.
It's a
dramatic change. Yes.
It's like changing who you are. I don't want to say as a person because I think he did separate his personal life and his professional life, but changing who you are as a person within that professional setting.
Correct.
That's what he did.
And it's very difficult. And
it's
I think it all starts.
60 years old.
Yeah.
You know?
It all starts in that 2007 year when Strahan said it best on America's Game, which I would take to believe that really was the turning point and the players saw it. He's like, nope, no practice today. And they went bowling.
Yeah. Love that.
Love it.
I'm a big bowler.
You're a big bowler, right?
You know
but
that.
Team camaraderie, team chemistry. Tom Coughlin.
I'm gonna do
doing
this.
That. Yeah. Big bowler. Heard you sucked last week.
I really sucked. Yeah. Well, I mean, hey, maybe you know this is coming out in a few. This episode's coming out in a few weeks from when we're filming it. So maybe I did better. But
doubtful.
I did do better. I know I did for a fact. Yeah. I know I did. I don't want to. You know what? I kind of don't want to talk about Tom Coughlin resigning.
I would love not to.
Yeah.
It's bullshit because he didn't resign.
There's some good parts about Kevin Gilbride. Those are my main notes about Kevin Gilbride talking about the lack of talent that was replenished, that was not replenished from the 2017, especially looking at the offensive line and how they even called out like that 2011 team. Kevin Gilbride was like,
they weren't good.
Even that team was like, and we've all said this, but even like hearing just the coordinator say, they were like not very good.
Yeah.
So that was the main thing. Here, I have a quote, so I'll just read the quote.
Rip the quote. Yeah, I think I know which one you're going to talk about.
What page do you think I'm going to go to?
Let me see it.
I'll give you 10 seconds to figure it out because I'm already there.
335.
Nope, 337.
Ah, fuck.
Back in 2009, I started to argue that the line was getting old. Who is this?
It's Gilbride.
No, this is not Gilbride.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is Gilbride. Back in 2009, I started to argue that the line was getting old. In 2010, we were getting beat up. We were still winning because we were still good enough, Gilbride said. Yeah, it is him. In 2011, when we even won the Super Bowl, there were multiple guys getting hurt and banged up. And by 2012, we went 9-7, but we were hanging on by dear life. When 2013 happened, there were 6 different starters at running back, 3 different at right guard, 4 different at center, 3 at left guard. That stuff's been going on for a while now. And lo and behold, that stuff not only has been going on, for a while in 2013, it's been going on for a while since 2013.
Yeah. And they kept.
Suck.
They kept the GM who put that team in order.
Yeah. Got rid of Gilbride, which at the time it's fully justified, but you know now it's like we can do hindsight's 2020 because that's what this,
now we can. Yeah.
That's what this
and
show
okay,
is.
Fine. I understand after 2011 that it got bad. It did.
Yeah.
And if you're going to fire Coughlin, which they did, he didn't resign. I'm sorry. Like, I don't know who needs to hear that. And if you don't know that, then you're a fucking idiot.
Whoa.
Yeah, sorry. You're not. Love you. Keep watching. But if you're going to fire Coughlin, you have to fire Jerry Reese too.
Yeah.
That's the thing. And my letter, which is on the screen right now, I'll send you that, it says, I wrote after they fired Coughlin. And John Mara's like, I trust Jerry Reese because I've seen him do it before. Hmm. You didn't see Tom Coughlin coach a mediocre team in the Super Bowl before?
Yeah,
that, fucking dopey.
Even Patty, Patty in the book was saying how it's funny how in 2015 for teams that, for a team that got the criticism of not finishing and not fighting back and blah, 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 that you fired the coach that was known for responding to teams like that. Yes. What was the 2010 season,
Exactly.
Yeah.
2010, they were actually pretty good 2010. 10-6, obviously the fucking misery of the Eagles, DeSean Jackson. But they won 10 games. You win 10 games in the NFL now, you might be a one seed.
Yeah.
In the NFC.
Titans won 11 games last year.
Exactly. So it's like...
In a 17-game season.
So it's like...
Did they? I don't know.
Shut the fuck up. When we decided to do a Titans history podcast...
We'll talk of Titans.
Oh, wow. Talking Titans.
I'm going to week one Nashville. You're not... David Powis says he's going to be on the show.
Still, maybe I will.
Wow. All right.
My only trepidations are two things. We're done. Those are the three chapters. Those are the three chapters.
Episode over.
Episode. Well, I wouldn't go that far yet. We still got to close out. Oh, I know what you're saying. Yes, those three. Anyway, my only two trepidations are it's my dad's birthday that weekend.
Tickets are expensive as fuck.
I'm out. No, fuck
they
that.
Are. They're expensive
as hell. And that's also why I want it mid-year. Week one's always going to bang you. Always.
Excuse me?
Oh. Yeah, week one's always going to be expensive. Whoops.
All right.
Bang me like Yankees Twitter did this
week. Burn. Keep on bleeding blue. That's a show. We'll see you next week, next time that we're coming to you. Keep on bleeding blue. It's next.
Fuck you, Tiki Barber. Fuck you. Keep that in! Julian, keep that in!
Ball and Play 2, presented by DraftKings, kicks off on May 5th. Head over to the Warehouse Games channel to catch Game 1. Get some skin in the game and download the DraftKings app right now. Don't forget to use our promo code WAREHOUSE. That's promo code WAREHOUSE only at DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours.